ask everybody just to introduce themselves in the context of the work that they do and how they engage with making work for young people. And Geert is going to say a few words about their incredible company, and then we're just going to have a conversation and invite you to be part of that conversation. So we might start with an intro from Aoife.
I'm Aoife Tunney. I'm the head of the Culture Office at the Creative Europe Desk Ireland, and we're based in the Arts Council, as Marilyn said. Our work is really underneath the Culture Sub-Programme, which is part of the Creative Europe Programme. For anyone who doesn't know, that is a large pot of funding. This next year, 2025, is €338 million across media and culture. But obviously the Culture Office is really for culture sub-funding, and what we do is reach out and inform, give everyone the information as the sector in Ireland to make them aware of what Creative Europe can do for them, whether you're an organisation or an artist. So that's our role. So we talk a lot and come to events like this. So after this, if you still want and you're eager to hear more, do get in touch with us.
Oh, it's my turn already?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Hello, everyone. My name is Amber. I am a member of Compagnie Barbarie. We played here with the grown-ups. Very lucky to be here. It was wonderful. We had 7 shows and it was great fun. We've been making... I'm doing my full introduction? No. So, yeah, Amber, hello.
Just hi.
Yes, I thought so, yes. So
my name is Zita Epengi, and now, at the moment, I work for Het Palais, which is a big structure like Bronx in Flanders, a performing arts center for young audiences. But I've worked in young audiences many years, also for smaller companies that work with project funding, and I just started out as structural funding, which is why I'm here.
Geert.
Yes, my name is Geert.
Can we look at the pronunciation?
Yes. So G-E-E-R-T, but I respond to everything that kind of sounds like it. So I work for Bronx Theatre, which is located in Brussels, the capital of Belgium, but it's part of Flanders. So we're a Flemish company in Brussels, because Brussels is a bilingual city, and it's important that you know that we're a Flemish company. And I work very closely together with Veerle Kerkhove, who is the artistic director in Bronx, and I focus on strategy and artistic vision. And I have another hat. I also coordinate the department in Bronx that is responsible for the participative work, the co-creative work with young people. So, like Zita already mentioned, we kind of have a similar structure. I think it's important to know how the ecosystem in Flanders is organized. There's a kind of hierarchy, but the hierarchy is based on scale. So like the biggest structures, there are 3 bigger structures in Flanders, in the 3 main or bigger provinces, which is Het Palais in Antwerp, Brussels is Bronx, and then in Ghent is the Kopergieterij. And those structures are producing. We are actually kind of venues, theaters. So we're producing a theater. We produce 4 plays per season, per year. I think
we also make 4 creations per year.
And of course, if you own a venue, you also present other people's, other artists' plays. So that's the main function. And we have a 10-year funding, which is very comfortable, of course. But only these 3...
We don't like you anymore.
Yeah. So it's important to know that this 10-year subsidy is new. We only got this...
Starting from 2023.
23. So, and the reason why this kind of funding line has come to, is invented is because the sector was also asking our government, like, is there a possibility that we wouldn't get any subsidies? And of course, the answer was no, because Flanders already invested so much in our venue, the whole working, that actually there wasn't a reason to think that we wouldn't get subsidized. So we then asked, like, so why not kind of give us a long-term perspective? And they kind of listened to us, and it was a wonderful gift.
Maybe I can add that it's not just the youth performing arts. It was a question from all city theaters. I think Het Paleis, Bronx, and Kopergieter. I'm the not-so-funny one in this panel, I'm sorry. And so Kopergieter, Bronx, and Het Paleis are the city theaters that focus on young audiences, and this 10-year funding is mostly attributed to houses that have a large infrastructure. And that's why the chances of it being cut are small, because the infrastructure is so significant within its region.
And also, we have a lot of long-term engagements in international work. And that was also a very good reason to ask our government, like, if you want us to do this international work, please give us some funding that we can do some engagements in that term as well.
And that relationship is directly with the Flemish government.
Yes.
Under the arts decree.
Yes. So the arts decree, and there's a close relationship with the administration of our government and the sector. So that's a plus, of course. And then there's other companies who have a 5-year perspective, and then you have smaller companies or individual artists who can rely on project funding, and you can apply for project funding twice a year. And that's how roughly how the ecosystem is working. So if you're a bigger venue, you kind of agree to have more responsibilities for the whole ecosystem. So you kind of take care of the smaller structures, and we tend to work closely together. We all know each other, and we're quite generous towards each other, I think.
Yes, very.
We're all friends.
Are you sure?
Well,
of course, Flanders is a very small region.
Very small.
We know each other very well.
You should be aware of so Belgium is a complicated country. We have three communities, so a French-speaking part and a Flemish, a Dutch-speaking part. And that is also something you should be aware of to understand the funding system, because there's also identity politics involved in it. In a way, it sounds heavy, but that's a bit like, there's this investing in your own culture is very important in Flanders and the French speaking.
Which means that there's not something as Belgian work. It's a very different sector and very different artistic identity and very different work that's being presented, because there's a historic difference in the funding system and the infrastructure in the sector.
Because when I looked at it, I was really interested in the fact that it's a region with its own parliament and an arts decree, which is a similar, I suppose the nearest thing to the arts in Ireland would be the Arts Act, which was revised in more in 2003. And the differences are quite substantial in terms of the legislative framework that you operate under compared to what we operate under. And the joy of having the opportunity to make work through your own language. I mean, I noticed Branner here, who would be one of Ireland's and, you know, I would say Europe's leading organization in terms of making work through native language for young people. It's a privilege and a joy, but also it's a right. Mm-hmm. You know, and we talk about human rights quite a bit in the context of children, and I might lean into to Aoife on this one, because I was very interested in the new commissioner for culture at a European level, Glenn Metcalf, who's recently being appointed. He's only 35, from Malta, and he's part of the Labour Party in Malta, who have passed a really interesting cultural policy, which makes art making at the centre of human rights and rights of the child. And I think that's a really interesting way of working. And I think what he might do, or what he might bring if it all goes through, would be very interesting. We talk about your 10-year funding. We're not jealous at all, in any way, shape or form. What changes would you like to see, Aoife, at Creative Europe level that you think could impact organisations like Babro and Branner and many people in the room to make work a little bit easier on a multi-annual basis?
Well, I don't know. I mean, changes in the sense that we always need more budget would be the first change. Address the issue that, for instance, with cooperation projects, which would be our first kind of in Ireland, the most accessed port of funding, we've done really well, but across Europe it's oversubscribed and there's just not enough money. So it means that the percentage of successful rate goes down. So it doesn't look great when you're trying to promote it at regional or national level or European level, because your chances are less. So that would be the first thing, and that looks like, for instance, already the programme for funding for culture has increased the budget for 2025. So they have to roll out the end of this programme till the end of 2027. So we're all pushing at any moment we can within our own network, within our department representative in Europe. So if anyone has any other reps that they can push, because it obviously immediately impacts the access people have and how it has a trickle-down effect in a national sense. When we look at Galway, at the moment there's 6 live cooperation projects for just the Galway region, which is pretty amazing, because cooperation projects are over 2 to 4 years. They're multi-partnerships. They obviously exchange and cooperate across Europe, so they're quite massive projects to undertake. So it's pretty amazing how that, in such a small space, we've got a really active, engaged cultural sector here. So I'd like to see, obviously, more funding, and it looks good so far. I'd like to see continued support for Culture Moves Europe. So I don't know if you're aware of this programme that was launched at the beginning of 2021, and already Ireland has done really well. We've 1 out of 5 applicants have been successful. So it sounds small, but 48 successful stories of both residencies and individual artists. And that's an amazing fund, because it's easy. And what you're saying is, what do we want? We don't want it to be really easy, but we do want to help people access something that isn't a massive culture Creative Europe project, because they're quite onerous. But just to be able to access culture funding for mobility for artists and not just organisations, which I think we look out, and I talk to people today, and it's hard to be saying for an individual artist, What can you do? How can I access this funding in Europe? And up until recently, it was only through organisations, which obviously through Babel and through all those projects, you do get opportunities. There's open calls, there's commissioning. But as an individual artist, you want to see that as an opportunity within Europe as well.
And the mobility funding, I think it's actually quite accessible. There's a lot of people who've come to us to assist with the applications. They're actually very basic. I was surprised at how basic they are, but it opens the doors. And I think the Arts Council have been really, really proactive. And as somebody who is in Brussels every second week at the moment, the Irish Arts Council is actually punching way above its own weight and its own resource and staff in terms of its presence in Europe and its reputation in Europe. And I think that's something we don't acknowledge enough. But I think have that conversation. Aoife is here, Maureen's here, Sinead is here. You know, take the opportunity this evening to meet and greet, because the opportunities are there. And, you know, the information has been disseminated. So it's a great opportunity to maybe have some Irish artists come visit you.
Sure.
Yeah, from Galway. It'd be great. We'd love to chat to Amber about your work in the context of Bronx and your residency and what you're doing.
Compagnie Barbarie was founded in 2007 and we started off making shows for grown-ups. But then after a few years, we understood that the way we work, the topics we choose, the physical and very visual language we use to make theatre was... it felt better to do it for young audiences. At that time, we were all becoming mothers. It's an all-female company. And we became strong believers in showing artistically, help me...
Challenging.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Zita. Thank you. Work for children. So then we decided to only make shows for young audiences. Sometimes it's for the very small, 4 years old, and sometimes for 8. We never go to the adolescents. I have two at home. It's enough, eh?
Yeah.
No. I mean, there's wonderful work for adolescents, but it wouldn't be our work. Yes, and we've been doing that since 2012, I think. And every show we've made until now is devised. Do you say it like that? Mm-hmm. So we never start with a script. We always start a blanco, but we choose a theme that we find personally very important, whether it's feminism, capitalism, or apartheid, or and we try to. We try to research the problem or the issue to its core or to its kern core, and translate that for a younger audience. We believe very much that every child has all the tools it needs to understand big problems, to understand adults. And in every show that we make, we always make the adults in the room look at themselves through the eyes of the children. So we want. I mean, we all have a big responsibility as adults, and sometimes it's good when the kids, when we see the kids looking at us, if that makes any sense. So now I have some pictures. Oh, yeah, if you can see it, maybe it's too dark. Yeah, whatever. I don't want to take up too much space. This is the billboard poster. Poster for Mise en Place. It was a show, a big show we did with a company who work with actors with additional needs. Is that correct? Yes. And the show was produced by Bronx and Palais and the Copergieterij, so the three big theater for young audiences co-produced it, and it's until now the only show where we had such a big cast, because normally we're only 4 on stage and 1 director. Mise en Place, it was wonderful to work with these people. It was so inspiring. It's not a real leg. And then the next one. I wanted to show this picture. We wanted to show, because I wasn't the only one who decided. Barboro wanted to use this picture as a promotional image for grown-ups. And then there was a big discussion that it looked too dangerous, and I don't know why. But it's, I think, last year when we toured in Flanders, we had a big tour. Most of the theaters and venues had this picture in big on the theaters, and I think it's a voorbeeld. It's an example of how in Flanders it's becoming. I hope I say it right. It's becoming normal to not is belittle too strong.
Underestimate.
To not underestimate children. They know what is dangerous. They know it isn't real. they know we are playing. So that's a picture from Grown Ups.
You know, one of the reasons that we decided not to was actually because of the people who buy the tickets are not the children.
I know.
And that's part of it.
I know. And when we have issues, it's always with adults, never with children.
How far do you push the boundary in terms of what you make and how you make it and who decides? Who decides it's too far?
Exactly. And as adults, I think we always see or we tend to see young people as not ready yet, not ready yet adults or something like that. And I think that's very protective and I think that's not the correct way to treat young people. They know themselves what the boundaries are and what the limitations are. And I think any subject is suitable for children. I honestly believe that. Mm-hmm. It's the way you approach it, I think, the way you present it.
We have this conversation a lot in relation to dark gaming. It's a huge area of discussion in Europe at the moment around what children are accessing in terms of gaming. So they have a device in their hand. The content is readily available. In film, obviously, we have age limits in Ireland in relation to what's screened through permissions and so on. The commission will decide what the age limits on film are, but how do we get there on theatre? I mean, it's difficult for you in terms of I think this is a really interesting discussion around what you program based on who buys the tickets. That's difficult. Yeah. From an artistic director's perspective, you want to challenge and push and and take kids to where they want to go.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, it'd be much simpler actually if children were just buying, given a credit card and buying tickets. There's an idea. It's teachers and parents generally who are making those decisions. And I suppose within a festival context, I feel like you have a little bit more permission. But it's really a bit of a game of trust, because we have a really fantastic audiences here in Galway that we've built up over many, many years, and we have fantastic teachers who go to all of the trouble of deciding to choose something to come to get the money for the bus, to get all of the permissions, etc. And they trust you, so it's kind of pushing a little bit. Yeah. But not so much that they're going to run away, never come back. I know, like Kirsty and Mars, who do a fantastic job with really individual bookings with all of the schools. And from time to time, I hear them going, "Oh my God, we're going to get the calls from the teachers next week or whatever." And it's really there's an opportunity there. A lot of these children don't see much work. We're very lucky in Barbro to have great audiences, but the provision in the city in Ireland generally isn't as much as it should be. So there might be one opportunity for that child to see a show in a year if they come with their school. So you want to make it a really worth seeing, I suppose, and to maybe alter their perspective in terms of maybe what a performance could be and should be.
So I know with my own kids, they challenge us in terms of what they see, and very much so. And I find they are exposed to work that they get more when we're away from home, because it's more challenging. I was saying this to Joanne a couple of years ago when my eldest was 9, we left a show at Barbro and she said, "Mom, I'm done. I need to go to Druid. Have a word with Gary Hines." I was like, "Yeah, right." And she wanted to be challenged. And I think that's an interesting, when you expose children to work, you're developing audience and you're developing them and their taste. What challenges have you experienced in terms of how far you push it? How do you make that decision? And I'll pose that to you and Zita.
Grown Ups was beginning. It could have been a very, very dark show. And that, because we wanted to talk about the environmental problems and how grown-ups are not dealing with it. And then at one point you go, but it has to be hopeful for the kids. It has to be, and then you look for a new way. But do the the complete trajectory of that is necessary, so you can't shy away from it in the beginning. You have to go into the dark reality.
We also used to creating within the Flemish context, so very often it's only when you go abroad it's like, oh, I'm sorry, is this provocative? Because we're totally unaware of it, and I've seen it happen so many times. Often if we, because I'm not an artist, I'm more of a producer type of person, and so if we tour a show abroad, very often we have to up the age limits because the audience is different from a Flemish children's audience. I'll give a concrete example. There was a 4+ show that we did, the Familie. It's about a divorced couple that fights a lot, but like real fights. They also shout at each other and use like swear and bad names, etc. And so there's a lot of swearing and saying fucking diarrhea bag and blah blah blah. And so it was so funny, and the children laughed. And then the first time we toured it abroad, it caused this huge uproar that it was unsuitable for children, this type of language, and but we were, it toured for 2 years in Flanders, and nobody even had the conversation. It's just different.
But it is opening up a really important conversation, and I think that's what really good art does sometimes too, you know. So, and what about Bronx in terms of your policy? And I might bring Aislinn in as well, just to talk about the Barbaro Children's Panel, because what's their role in relation to it?
We involve them kind of in, I suppose we're still finding our way with the children's panel really, so we've just started with a second group, and there we just had some of the alumni meeting with Maureen and Niall and Mark, and they're a fantastic group of children who are beginning to really kind of find their critical voices, I suppose, and we've just started with a new group now. So they're not involved directly in choosing the work for the festival at the moment, but we do consult with them in terms of kind of areas that they're interested in, and in some of the ways that the organisation kind of operates. But it's kind of baby steps in that regard in terms of us figuring out how that works.
But it's a great initiative, Aislinn, to have a children's panel in the festival, I think, to be involved in. You know, having the discussion in terms of being
absolutely. We're learning a huge amount from them all of the time.
Maybe I can also add an extra in relation to the question you asked before. I think what we all do is do a lot of testing during every creation, because it's devised work, and so because we have longer creation processes and periods than I think is usual here, it allows for more tryouts and testing, and so it's a way of if you do a tryout, then you can sort of sense this is too far or this is too much tension, and then adapt a piece without compromising really. And then in terms of this youth-led decision-making, this is a word I learned in Ireland, which I loved. I think so. This thing of panels, etc. I think it's a new trend in everywhere in Europe. So we're also experimenting a lot with that, and in terms of programming, mostly not so much on the creative side yet, because there I think it's still artist-led.
Yes.
But in the programming side, we are also experimenting with that.
And do you think the duration of the residencies that you have allow for the time and the space to make that work and to allow for failure as well? I mean, in the Irish context, we're not so great at allowing failure and accepting it and embracing it, because failure is good too. That's where the majority of the learning is, and to allow for failure. I love, there was a German system program that I really loved. It was Open Nights, called FUCK Up. And it was really just to talk about the feck ups and do it in a very open and transparent way around what goes wrong, and can we learn from failure, and can we share the failures. So can we talk a little bit about that in terms of the time and space to create? Because your residency is how long? How many?
5 years. And we make a show every year, one show. But before that, we were always project funded. So this is a very luxurious situation where we don't have to worry about getting funding or doing our own communication or making sure the decor is made on time, because all those very practical things are being lifted from us. Bronze takes care of it. And we can just take our time to do the artistic work, which is great. And what it also gives us is the opportunity to work with the crew from Bronx on an artistical level in terms of what Bronx stands for. So we can talk about the programmation or about the visuals. Or so we're married for 5 years.
Yeah, we see the company, because there's another company as well. So we have two companies in residence, and we see them as a partner for 5 years, and they really influence us in every way possible. So it's not only a creational relationship, it's thinking, like, why can we go with Bronx together with the two companies?
So you provide the space, the communications?
Yeah, we kind of take care of all the parts that are not
fun.
That we think artists shouldn't take care of. So we take that away from them so they can be artists.
I think it is the first time since my career, which is so long. I mean, I'm old. No. That I actually get paid sometimes to read a book. To really do, I mean, it sounds, but I mean, we get few days in a year where Bronx says, go and see shows, go and see exhibitions, read, do research, and that it's seen as a job. In the past, it was just, you know.
And the entire Irish sector moves to.
Yeah, it sounds like absolute utopia. Yeah.
But it is in Belgium too, eh? I mean,
yes,
we're very, very lucky ones, because there's a lot of artists who have big difficulties to. And I think Bronx made the decision to do this with two companies because the atmosphere is also changing politically, and it's. When we started out, it was easy to go to a infrastructure, a house or a theater, and ask a little bit of funding extra on the project funding, but it becomes more and more difficult also. So we're in a very, very luxurious position.
And do you think it affects the work that you're making
yes.
then, in terms of having that space and,
yes.
and for risk and failure and
yeah.
playing?
Can I just, in terms of, because what you call an artist in residence, I would more call an associate artist,
yeah.
because you're a house artist,
okay.
whereas an artist in residence is where you support an artist for
right.
2 or 3 months without necessarily having a production finished at the end. And I think we do both types of support.
I agree. Yeah.
yeah.
Mm. So there's no onus on you to actually produce output at the end. It's developmental.
Also,
yes.
Yeah.
But we have to make a show once a year.
Whether it's good or bad.
It's never bad.
Well, how do we leverage this relationship, I suppose, between Galway and the West and you and mobility? And we have all the right ingredients on this panel to start a magnificent conversation between Flanders and Galway. And I say the West because I think Barbaro really provides an opportunity for a lot of companies in the Western region and Ireland to really showcase their work at a really high level here. It becomes that presentation house for these magnificent days in Galway. So what are the next steps in terms of building on this relationship?
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of people who'd like to play.
Yeah.
And you're right, in the West, like Barbaro is just a bit of a window, really. But there's fantastic companies and artists, of course, based here. And there is a bit of an ecosystem developing here. And like we were talking, you know, in a panel earlier on today, I suppose, about connecting and producers and funding and artists, and a lot of it really comes down to relationships. And I think it's, you know, it's the same in any kind of collaboration. And I think so, you know, I think there's probably a lot of similarities in terms of kind of the culture and the kind of maybe attitudes and and personalities and kind of humor between the two regions. So I think there's really kind of fertile ground there. You know, I think there's probably opportunity through Creative Europe. There's the Arts Council International Residency Initiative, which is a great fund as well. And and talking like to the Flanders Arts Institute, to Julie Reist, who unfortunately couldn't be here, but is really interested in Irish work as well, and in the potential, I think, for kind of exchange or collaboration between the two areas. So, I think it's probably really kind of teasing out where the interest is, the artistic interest, because, you know, like I you know, an organization like Babaro or other organizations can kind of facilitate, but we're just very willing to bring people together or try to support that. But it's really from an artistic point of view, it's where's the interest, where's the sweet spot, I suppose. So that's
sense.
Something we can maybe explore a bit.
Yeah. And I think making work through our language, there's a number of organisations in the room who make work through Irish. Galway too is Ireland's only bilingual city. So I think there's wonderful opportunities that we could look at as well in terms of other funding agencies who specialise specifically through the Irish language, and a number of European funds that look just at the language-based work, which could be interesting. I'm not looking at Joanne in particular, but you're looking at Joanne in particular. Not nodding to Maldi.
No pressure.
But I just think it's an opportunity when we have people who share the same passion for work in the room, to really encourage you to, after this discussion, meet, have a cup of coffee and just start the conversation, because that's the first start, isn't it, Aoife, in relation to any European funding application, is the white of the eye.
I've never heard that one before, the white of the eye. It's like, do you have to open your eyes really wide?
Well, it is. You know, it's just sitting with somebody, connecting on a human level, and knowing that you're going to work with them for the next 2 to 3 years and making that personal connection.
Yes.
So I think that's actually quite important.
I was just going to add, actually, you mentioned earlier on the new commissioner designate, so he will come to the commission and he kind of delivers his paper in December. So it's not really completely signed off what he's going to deliver on, but what they're saying around the corridors of Europe is that because youth is within his portfolio. So it's intergenerational fairness, youth, culture and sport. So that's over his term, which is 2024 to 2029. So it'll be really interesting to see what comes out of that in terms of culture and youth in context of the conversation today. But apparently there is going to be a pilot scheme for supporting children and culture, so that's to be coming. We don't know any details of it yet, but obviously I will share it with you once there's details released. But it's really looking at kind of voice of children, active citizenship. Obviously they've been brought in the European Year of Youth into more kind of policy decision making for culture, but for their open spaces, for everything else in education, but that culture is at the beginning and kind of in the middle of the children's experience of culture within Europe. Apparently he will also talk about a new framework which will be called a culture compass, harnessing the potential of culture in Europe, with children and culture at the heart of that. So it's an exciting time for this sector. So yeah, I'll let you all know once he talks in December. Yeah,
because what we heard last week as well is that youth democracy will form a huge part of the new DG in terms of how they're going to approach decision making. So I think it will be a very interesting time. This conversation is now happening at a European level. It's great to have the desk in Europe, and you are very active in the space. To have our Irish voice there is really, really important. And, you know, I think what they've done in Malta is interesting. And if he can bring a fraction of that to a European playing field, the voice of the child in culture is going to be really interesting. And it's an interesting time, even with the new European Bauhaus. So there's a new facility coming on stream, they think February, March. And the new European Bauhaus has an exceptional amount of Horizon funding attached to it. And it will look at building an infrastructure and development. But part of that is the inclusion of how the space is used. So again, youth democracy will play a huge role in that, which brings us to infrastructure. A word we love here in Galway. Don't have a whole lot of it. But what we do have, we make great use of. And, you know, Babro and Branner and Galway Community Circus have long campaigned for a centre for children and culture in Galway. It's something we do need. It's something we do want. You know, I might look at you and others to say, what would that mean to you? What would a space like that mean to you? If the new European Bauhaus facility became a reality and, you know, you could apply, you would apply, what would a space like that, how would it change the landscape here in the West?
Well, I suppose it would really, again, kind of add to that the importance of work for children in the region and the importance placed on it. And like, we have such a young population and that really aren't served as well as they should be through, you know, a lot of different infrastructure and certainly within the arts. So, yeah, I think it would be really fantastic. Obviously, we're all, like, I meet artists all of the time who are crying out for spaces to make work, to develop, to house their offices, to, you know, to come together, to be able to collaborate. Like Branner have done, you know, great service to the city in terms of their space that they're very generous in sharing in Galway. Galway Community Circus, likewise, you know, there are a lot, but it's all happening just by quite organically, I suppose, you know, without a whole lot of structure and the kind of funding and the kind of resourcing that it could really do with. And obviously for the huge amount of children and that we serve them for 10 days of the year, and then through some of our arts and education projects year round, but, you know, they're all here all year round. We're obviously welcoming a huge number of new families into the area as well, and, you know, there's a real opportunity for kind of real community integration as well within those kind of spaces if we had more of those civic cultural spaces. And you know, even within the work that we do with outreach through the festival, Aoife and Bri, who's on maternity leave at the moment, do brilliant work out in the community. And like, part of that function is really reaching those children, but also letting them know that they belong within, you know, cultural spaces in Galway and wherever they live or wherever they happen to find themselves because of the circumstances that they're in. So can you imagine if that cultural space was designed especially for children and young people, and there was a real genuine kind of welcome into those spaces? It would be fantastic. But we've been having this conversation for a very long time, unfortunately, and we could do with some movement on it.
In terms of your spaces, can you just give us a little bit of an overview of what size space? What are we talking about in terms of your venues?
We're going to be so many.
Just don't like you. Go on, Zita.
Actually, we are the smaller venue. You have the largest venue. But yeah, so like, Bronx exists for 35 years, and half of it we were nomadic, and we know how it is not to have a venue, but it changed everything, having a venue. And it means so much, because as a government, you kind of validate the work, the artists, but also, and that's, I think, the most important reason to go for a building, is you validate the young people. Like, you have to have your own building for your own art, and it changed our complete organization. Like, we were able to build a network with schools and invite them and invite other people, international people.
We still don't have a sense of space here. You're not answering the question.
Okay, the sense of space. So
how big? Bigger than this room?
It's rather small. So, okay, so we have a theater hall that seats 200 people, and then we have two rehearsal spaces that can become another additional performing hall for 100 people. There's a cafe. We have our workshop where we can build sets. There's toilets as well. There's a small terrace and a kitchen, but we don't own the building. So it's property from the city of Brussels, and they kind of pay us / fund us to
operate it. Okay, similar model to Galway Art Centre here in Galway.
Okay.
For example.
But Sita, she has a palace, and it's called the Palace. So.
Yeah, Fala, it's really big. It is actually the biggest cultural infrastructure for young audiences in the entire Western European sphere. So it is really big. I think it was constructed in the 70s. It's a huge building, but half of the building is more of a commercial theater where they do big scale musicals and commercial ballets, etc. And then the other half is Hut Palais. So our own venue, we have a theater hall that seats 530 people with a huge stage, which is 20 meters deep, 18 wide, and a huge tower of, I'm not exactly sure, but I think 18 meters, so really, really big, large scale work could be made there. And then we have a smaller venue, which seats 120, which is 10 in 12 in 5. And on top of that, we have three rehearsal spaces. We have our own...
You can stop now.
Yeah. Yeah, voilà. And then, so we have rehearsal spaces, and then the set workshop, because we also build our own sets. We have a costume workshop. On top of that, we have extra spaces to do the ateliers, because we do a lot of drama ateliers and a lot of workshops with children in free time and for schools. We have a cafe. We have a cafe, and we have a cafeteria where we get wonderful food, soul-healing food for very little money every day.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yes.
Thank you to the most fantastic panel.